Time to make a start. Okay, so we're into the home stretch of today. We're finishing off with a couple of Pearl Talks. First up, we have Grant McLean, who's going to tell you something about object orientation.
Thank you. Right, before I do that, just want to plug this event that's happening on Wednesday evening. We're calling it a hack-off. So it's a team-based programming event. You turn up and I ask you stupid questions and you go away and write code to come up with an answer. And it's sort of you follow through a trail answering as many questions as you can in the time. And there'll be a winner and there'll be a prize. So if you want to know about it, go to Wellington Pearlmonger's site, /hackoff. It is in no way a Pearl event. It's just we happen to be the people organising it. So, you know, if you want to come along and show the supremacy of Python or Ruby or C with Talloc for coding up things quick, then by all means do that. So, what I want to talk about today is an aspect of object-oriented programming that I think sucks. Now, if you know me, you might already be dismissing this talk on the basis that I'm a Perl guy and everybody knows that OO sucks in Perl. But in fact, in this particular area, all the languages suck. And perhaps surprisingly, Perl sucks slightly less in this area than many of the rest. So, some smart people are well ahead of me on this game. They've recognised the same suckiness. They've done some research. They've come up with a solution. They've implemented it in Smalltalk. And other smart people have ported it to Perl. So if you're not a Perl person, then take away some of these ideas and think about porting them to your language of choice. So the suckiness that I'm referring to is that I think from the outset OO has promised code reuse and really hasn't delivered as much as it could. And I'm not suggesting we're not reusing code, because we clearly are, but we're kind of reusing it at a macro level rather than a micro level. We say, I'm going to use this whole library, but there might be all sorts of interesting things in it that we could reuse, except they're not available for that purpose. And the reason that we don't use the reuse code a lot is because it's hard. To understand why, we need to look a bit closer at the tools. What's an object? My simple answer to that question is data plus behavior. So data, the object state, usually in object properties, and the behavior is in methods. So we implement methods that take certain arguments, and that's the interface that the objects of that class implement. And if we wanted to throw jargon at it, we could say we encapsulate things in that class, and then we use polymorphism allows us to write code that will accept any object that implements the interface that we're interested in. Now, I've said some things about OO. I've said some jargon. One thing I didn't say was inheritance, and there are people who passionately believe that it's not a critical part of object orientation. It is a critical part of what I'm talking about today. Now, the next question is, what's a class? And this turns out to be really interesting, because it's the crux of the problem. We use classes for two completely different things. On the one hand, if we want an object of a particular class, we go to the class, we call its constructor, it's a factory, it creates this thing that has all the behavior we want. And I mean all the behavior. It does everything. On the other hand, a class is something we use as a unit of code reuse. And these two uses conflict. You want an object that's complete, that does all the things you need, So that tends to make the code, the number of methods, the size of the methods bigger. But in order for something to be reusable, ideally you want it to be small. And ideally, I'd be talking about what was on that slide rather than the next one. But anyway, so ideally you want something to be so small that it's easy to look at it and understand what it does, and easy for you to make the decision, is this the thing that I want? So that then you can say, yes, it is, I want to reuse it. So the big idea that these smart people have come up with is, wouldn't it be cool if there was something smaller than a class that we could use for code reuse? And now there is, and they called it traits. So they've written a number of papers, and there's a link at the end. And in this paper, they went through a number of examples of what problems people encounter when they're trying to reuse code with the different types of inheritance. And then they defined their solution traits and how it works. In the second paper, they talk about their experiences refactoring some Smalltalk classes to use traits. And this one I found much more accessible. The other one's quite sort of dry and academic, and this is less so. And having read this, the other one made a lot more sense. So arguably it might help to read them in reverse order. So what are traits? The basic concept is you want to compose a class, possibly by inheriting from another one, but also by pulling in behavior from traits. So first and foremost, a trait is a collection of methods. It's not something that you can instantiate. You can't call new on a trait. The methods only exist in order to be pulled into the class that you're creating. That's their purpose. Your trait is pure behavior, according to the paper. So it defines methods but not properties. What the paper doesn't explain is why that's important, and I've got no idea. And in fact, the implementations of this in languages other than Smalltalk, all the implementers ignored that. In their Smalltalk trait, it is. You can obviously, from the trait, you can call accessor methods to access the properties of the object that it's being composed into. So you can get and set properties that are already in that class. But these guys reckon it shouldn't have properties of its own in the trait. The Perl guys said, eh. So these methods in the trait will get flattened into the class. Now what that means is there is no side effect of the fact that they were defined in a trait. There's nothing, no artifacts come over with it to say they were over there. It's exactly as if they were implemented in the class that you're building. And in the trait, the methods have no concept of a superclass over there. So that means that when they get flattened into your class, if they call super to refer to a method of the same name in a superclass, then it works the way you'd expect back up the hierarchy. And there are some composition operators, we'll talk about that later, to do with how you deal with conflicts when you pull in two traits that have a method with the same name, for example. And also, you can have dependency. So you can say, this trait provides these four methods and it requires that your class implement these two methods, for example. And if it doesn't, you'll get a compile time error. So, when we build classes, essentially, in the mainstream languages, inheritance is how it's done. There are a number of forms of inheritance. Single inheritance is pretty easy to understand, but it's really hard to reuse code in this model. If you've got code, a bunch of methods in class B, that you want in Class C, there are a small number of options available to you, and most of them aren't very good. In fact, all of them aren't very good. You could copy the code over, obviously a really bad idea. You could maybe push the code up to Class A, but that doesn't scale. If you've got a big hierarchy and something over here and something over there, you end up having to add the methods, you know, on the universal sort of object at the top. Or you could do some sort of proxying where you create an object of Class B and delegate methods to it, but it's all messy. Then there's multiple inheritance, which has a really bad rap. I love that quote. But multiple inheritance is seen as so evil that Smalltalk and Java and C# don't even implement it. And in fact, too evil for PHP. I mean, how bad does something have to be? But of course it is allowed in Perl, so, which doesn't mean it's a good idea. I've used it, and I have suffered some pain. And the big problem with it is you end up with bugs that are hard to diagnose, and things that happen because methods got silently overridden and you didn't realize it was happening at all. And finally, there's mixin inheritance. And this one we need to look at a bit more closely because it resembles traits in some ways. The big problem that I've found with mixin inheritance, and I have used it, is that the order in which you pull in these other classes matters, and that's not always obvious to someone who's maintaining your code. And you might have something that's working fine, they add a new method somewhere, and they just need to rejig the order of things, and it blows up, if you're lucky. If you're unlucky, it appears to work, and so you ship it. The big problem is if you've got two mixins that implement a method of the same name, then one of them will win, and you won't even know it's happened, and it might not have been deliberate. And the other final problem here is that mixins actually have a concept of a superclass, and there probably isn't one. So if you have pull in a mixin and it calls super, then it blows up. It makes no sense. So to summarize. So traits, conceptually, as I said, are quite similar to mixin, except that we're trying to make it so that if something bad happens, it happens at compile time. And I've got a little asterisk there to indicate that that is a lie. And if I have time, I'll come back to that later. But effectively, it's true. I'm talking about the Perl context there. So when you compose traits into a class, jumping to the second bullet point, if there is any conflict between method names, you can say, I want this trait in my class, except I don't want that method. Perhaps because you're implementing your own. Or you can say, I do want that method, but to avoid a conflict, I want it to be renamed to this name. And if you don't do that, as I say, you'll get a compile error. Now, the Smalltalk folk said, if you implement the method on your class directly, then that should just win. And once again, it's not clear why that was a good idea. If two traits with methods with the same name conflict is bad, why isn't it bad to have a conflict where you're implementing it in the class? And it turned out when one of the Perl people asked them, they said, oh, no, that's clearly a bug in the spec in your language. In Smalltalk, it would never happen. I don't quite understand why, but apparently it's the tools. The clever tools would mean they just never even try it. With dependencies, I mentioned we could say, I'm pulling in this trait, this set of methods, and they require this other method. If you do the same thing with mixins, you can assume the methods there. And you could manually run a check to say if the object can do this, but that's a runtime thing. Okay, so practical purposes, in Perl, traits are called roles because the word traits has been used for something else. So that's a shame. They're implemented for Perl 5 in a CPAN module called Moose. So if you get Moose, you've got traits/roles. And they're also in and working in Recudo Perl 6. Not necessarily totally complete, but certainly functional. Now, forgetting traits for a moment, or roles, if you're building a class using Moose, now, some of you might not have used Perl 00 ever or for a while, this might come as a surprise because it's really easy. In this class, I'm creating a class with one property and no methods. And it's a declarative style. I'm using Moose to say this class car has one property being color. That obviously being the most important property of a car. So that gives us an accessor method that we can read and write. Now, building a trait is very, very similar. We say use Moose role, and we can put state in here because that's what the Perl implementation does. So in this case, that's what we're doing. So I'm setting up a property Boolean flag to say whether or not this car is broken. And a method that we can use that does something and then sets that Boolean flag. So if we go back to the car class, the way to pull in that set of behavior, the breakable thing, is with the with keyword. But, I mean, that also is a lie. It's not a keyword. It's a function that was imported into our namespace when we said use Moose. But it looks like a keyword. If this was Ruby, we'd call it a DSL. So now, our car class has this set of behavior called breakable, which means there's a method. We can break the car. But things break in different ways. And it may be that we want the breakable role to track whether something is broken, but the way it actually breaks is perhaps better implemented in the class we're dealing with. So, for example, if it was a car that's breaking, if the car was moving at the time that it broke, then you might want to stop it moving. So we've moved our break method over here into the car class. We put that logic in to say, if it's moving, then set the isMoving Boolean to false. So now, this is a pretty cool trick, method modifiers. So now what we're saying is our role no longer has the break method. It requires that the class implement that method. And it might come from another role that's being composed in. And if it doesn't, then it'll be a compile time error with the caveat that that's a lie. So if anyone ever calls the break method on a car object, then it will run as normal, and then Moose will arrange for this bit of code down here to be run after it. So we don't have to worry about subclassing it, overriding the method and calling the original. We just hook in there, and obviously you can hook in before as well as after. And let's go all meta here. These roles or traits are so cool that Moose uses them to do clever things when it's constructing the classes. So just as an example here, if you have a Boolean flag, a Boolean property in your class, it's possible that you might want some set of standard behavior for that flag that people often want for Boolean flags. And so if you do want the standard Boolean behavior, then you can, when you declare your isMoving property, you can say, pull in the bool set of behaviors, which is a role that bizarrely uses the traits key. And then that set of behavior gets to look at the next thing, which is the handles hash there, and it says, oh, okay, he's got this Boolean flag called isMoving. So I'm going to give him an accessor method. He can set things to true or false with that isMoving method. But I'm also going to give him a method that he would like me to call start, and it will always set it to true. So it won't need an argument. If you call start, it'll set it to true. Stop will set it to false. And isStopped is going to, I'm running out of time, sorry, is going to set it, is going to return the opposite of whether it's moving. Slightly more natural fashion down here, $self stop if moving. So that pulls it all together, and I'm not going to go through that, you'll be thankful, but I just wanted to point out my earlier lie. If you say use car, then stuff happens and your class gets composed at that point. Now you might have another use something line, whatever. By the time it gets to the next line, the bad stuff will have happened if it was going to. So the stuff I said happens at compile time, actually it happens after that module gets compiled, but before the import returns. So effectively, it's the same thing. When you say with role to pull in some functionality, this is the sort of syntax you use, and it's all very nicely documented. There's tutorials and such like. And you can use it to alias methods and exclude methods. If I just go back to this one here. In the second to last line, you can see if car does role name. So that's kind of in the same family as is a, to check what the class of an object is, and can, does it do this method. Does says, does it do all the things, all the methods that are included in this role that we're importing, which might save you a lot of checking if you were going to be checking. And a 2-second Googling told me that there is an experimental version of all of this for Python called Simple Traits, so that might be worth investigating if you're into that sort of thing. It also allows properties. And that's it. That's the URL of where you can go to find out about traits. And I had masses of examples that I realized I just didn't have time to fit in, and so I didn't borrow quite as liberally from those papers as I had intended to. Time didn't permit. So
if you can swap laptop, that whole setup, and we'll take some questions from the audience, if there are any. Are there any questions?
Stunned silence.
Ooh, yay.
If you're going to be up here, there's a wire. Have you heard of networking with wires, Paul? Yeah. How our grandparents used to do it.
So, no more questions?
Go on, someone come up with a question. You're all stunned, aren't you?
Yes, we've got one over here.
See, the two key disadvantages you had there was that, you know, you can override methods silently and... the second one was...
That's what you're saying.
So part of that could be just resolved with defining it explicitly. Well, super was the other example that you gave. And you could just go with the option where super requires a parameter that, you know, chooses which one of the multiple inheritances that you're getting it from. Right. I'm making the point that you can actually make, without traits... you can kind of get the functionality that you want to and avoid those caveats?
Well, yes. I don't know about avoiding the caveats entirely. I mean, going down the multiple inheritance route, if you choose to do that, does buy you a potential world of pain. I discovered a number of people in the Python community have said there are two types of people, those who believe multiple inheritance is a good idea and those who've worked with soap.
you had roles on...
There's no point pointing at that screen.
Yeah, I can point, yeah. You had roles on properties that you had in your class, and you had roles that you were just applying to the class generally. And then you gave us an example of how to declare a role that you kind of pulled into the class using the with keyword. Yeah. How much more difficult or how different is it to declare a role that looks, you know, like the bull one? The bull role applied only to that particular method.
As in the...
to that particular attribute, sorry.
Right, okay. How difficult is it? I don't know, because that was one of the standard sets of behaviours that was really easy to pick up and use, but it is documented in the Moose documentation, how to go about that. So if you've got a type of property that you want to deal with a lot, then certainly you can race off and do that.
Yeah. No more questions from the hall? None. Everyone, please thank Grant.
Thank you.